and a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can listen to the show and take it with you on demand 24/7 by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, we start off this morning with a government that continues to be shut down. 5 days, 7 hours, 2 minutes, and 7 seconds now as we come on the air this Monday morning as the lines in the sand continue to be pretty squarely drawn by both Republicans and Democrats over this government shutdown. Just a quick reminder as to how we got here. Back in mid-September, the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. passed what is known as a clean continuing resolution, kept the government funded at every pre-existing level through November 21st of this year. That was passed in mid-September, ahead of the October the 1st shutdown. We then rolled into last week where the United States Senate was asked to pass the exact same thing, a clean continuing resolution that would keep the government open, the same legislation that had passed the House about 2 weeks prior. However, in the United States Senate is where a 60-vote filibuster threshold needs to be met. And because Republicans, who, yes, do have a sizable majority, they do not have 60 seats. It is very rare that a party in the United States Senate has a 60-seat majority. Republicans do not have that right now, and so that would have required Democrats to cross the aisle and vote in favor of that legislation. And a couple of Democrats did, including Senator John Fetterman out of Pennsylvania, an independent lawmaker out of, I believe, Maine, maybe, who is a independent but caucuses with the Democrats. A couple did in the final vote and the votes that have been taking place since late last week, 55-44, which is, as from a purely and simple math standpoint, 5 votes short of what is needed for that 60-vote filibuster. And from all accounts, from everything that I have had the opportunity to watch and read over the weekend, it seems incredibly likely that this shutdown continues. And I'll admit, I was wrong about this. I thought the Democrats would have already folded. And as we sit here on this Monday morning, a little after 7 o'clock, it is remarkable that still to this point, Democrats are failing to message the issue. I take you back to last week when we first started promoting and hearing about the shutdown and working through the process. I was surprised that Democrats weren't able to message this as effectively as usual. Now, part of that is likely President Donald Trump. He has the ability to suck all of the air out of the room from a media and messaging standpoint that we traditionally do not see on the Republican, on the GOP side. He has the ability to do that. It's something that he is uniquely capable of doing that typically Republicans are not. So you've got him who is leading this charge. He did meet with Chuck Schumer, the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, and Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the Democrats in the in the United States House. He met with them 1 week ago, last Monday. They had a negotiation. They talked it over at the White House. And the president, to his credit, is not willing to budge. And the reason he's not willing to budge makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. Democrats are trying to relitigate the one big beautiful bill that the president signed into law back on July the 4th. They lost that battle. They were unsuccessful in holding off that legislation and holding off a presidential signature on the one big beautiful bill. So now here we are in the early parts of October, and they are trying to rehash and relitigate some of those issues. And the largest is health care for those illegally in the United States of America. They are continuing to litigate this issue. They are continuing to roll this out as if it's some sort of winning political message that somehow you are going to win over the hearts and minds of the, win over the hearts and minds of the American voting public by telling them their hard-earned taxpayer dollars, the money that they earn slaving away at their job all day, is going to go to give an illegal immigrant free health care. Meanwhile, they're getting they're getting emails. I got one this morning from the healthcare exchange about how premiums for open enrollment, which begin on November the 1st, are set to skyrocket. So you've got healthcare costs that are about to balloon. And then you've got Democrats that are going forward and saying, well, we just need to provide healthcare to illegal immigrants. We need to provide free, government subsidized, taxpayer subsidized healthcare to people who are legally in the United States of America. I mean, it is almost laughable when you look at what is going on. It makes absolutely no sense from a purely political standpoint. This is a losing political issue. You can argue that if you want, you can debate that if you want, but if you look at polling, if you look at data, you will very clearly see that there is not a large contingent of the American voting population that is in favor of wide sweeping free health care for those that are illegally in the United States. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. So while the stalemate continues, there was no voting in the United States Senate over the weekend. The senators presumably went home. Some of them probably went home, went back to their districts. Others hung around in D.C., but there was no voting. That will resume in the early parts of this week. However, there was a lot of talk, a lot of conversation on the various cable news networks and from various individuals. Got a couple of clips before we roll into some other topics this morning. Here is Hakeem Jeffries on with Kristen Welker from NBC News. Take a listen to this.
But let me ask you, because you say this is a Republican shutdown, but it's Democratic senators who are withholding their votes on what is called a clean resolution. That means no strings attached, which is something, quite frankly, Leader, that you and other Democrats have advocated for in the past. Take a look.
You do not use the threat of shutting down government to try to advance your policy agenda.
First thing that the House has to do is pass a clean six-week CR.
A continuing resolution that is at the fiscal year 2023 levels is the only way forward.
Look at how damning that is. I mean, so you've even got NBC News. This show, Meet the Press, used to be hosted by Chuck Todd, now hosted by Kristen Welker. You've even got NBC News that is inviting, this is their premier political program, the Sunday morning show. This has been a staple of NBC News for decades now. They've got Hakeem Jeffries on, and Kristen Welker says, hey, Hakeem, this clean continuing resolution is something that you and a whole bunch of other Democrats have always advocated for in the past. What gives? And she's absolutely right. And this is why this shutdown, I'm generally surprised that it has gone to the point where it is right now, five days and 7 hours, because there's really no winning message here. Democrats can't run around the country and claim that Republicans have padded this continuing resolution with a whole bunch of policy and a whole bunch of crazy, awful, terrible Republican policy. They can't do that because it doesn't exist. They can't message this and fearmonger this into something that it's not, because it just doesn't exist. And so it is becoming increasingly tough for those on the political left to message this shutdown in a way to point the finger at Republicans, when this is literally nothing between the lines on this. This is literally a clean CR. Now, let me be clear. I'm not a fan of continuing resolutions. I find it absurd that we have to go through this garbage and nonsense every single year, sometimes multiple times a year, because members of the United States House and United States Senate can't seemingly do their jobs on any single timetable. So we're constantly at the threat of a government shutdown. We're constantly talking about continuing resolutions. I don't know why the hell they can't do their job, but here we are. It's a constant trend, unfortunately, in federal politics. It's the same thing every year. Wash, rinse, and repeat. It's the exact same thing. But with this CR, and sometimes you can pad a CR, and it's been done in the past by both parties. You can pad a continuing resolution with policy. You can pad it with wish list items for your political party. Republicans chose, and whether it was a right decision or wrong decision, chose not to do that, to, I would argue, extend an olive branch to the Democrats and say, just fund this. It'll keep the government open till the 21st of November. We'll hash out all the details in the next month and a half or so. And they extended the olive branch, and Democrats didn't bite. Democrats refused to seemingly take it seriously, at least a majority of them, in the United States Senate. And so here we are 5 days later with a shutdown continuing. Trump has nothing to back off of. It's not like there's a whole bunch of Trump issued, a whole bunch of Trump policy in the CR that he's has to risk losing. This is just funding the government the same way it has been funding prior to October the 1st. So there's nothing for him to really move on. And Democrats messaging the issue of health care for illegal immigrants makes absolutely no sense at all. Here's Speaker Mike Johnson on the same program, Meet the Press, yesterday morning.
What the Democrats are demanding is that illegal aliens that care for them in an emergency room should be reimbursed at a higher rate.
To the hospitals.
To the hospitals than American citizens, young pregnant women. They want to pay more for illegal aliens than U.S. citizens, and we are against that. The reason it's illegal right now for illegal aliens to receive taxpayer-funded benefits is because Republicans wrote it into the law July 4th. Don't take my word for it. Look at page 57, yep. Section 2141 yep. of Chuck Schumer's counterproposal. It's on my website at speaker.gov. Everybody go look. Don't take my word for it. Read their section. They want to reverse those changes.
And as you just heard there from Mike Johnson, is exactly the case. They are trying to relitigate and rehash their failure on the One Big Beautiful Bill. They lost that battle. Republicans, of course, have the majority, the simple majority in the House and the Senate, and of course, Trump in the Oval Office. So they have the ability to act and sign legislation. They did so. President signed it into law on Independence Day of this year. And since then, they have been spiraling out of control. Since then, they have been trying to figure out how to course correct said issue and now bring it back into the public sphere. And they're using a government shutdown to do it. It's a losing week, and I will argue from a purely political standpoint, I believe, a very stupid strategy from those on the left. Here was President Donald Trump traveling yesterday.
Firing federal employees during this government shutdown.
That's taking place right now, and it's all because of the Democrats. The Democrats are causing the loss of a lot of jobs with their, it's a shutdown. It's their shutdown, not our shutdown. It's their shutdown. And I hope everybody likes what's the Presidential Walk of Fame. You know that? Have you seen the? It's beautiful, isn't it? Presidential Walk of Fame. Thank you very much. Again, congratulations to the Navy.
So there's President Trump, the Navy birthday taking place yesterday. He traveling for that, saying it's taking place right now, and it's all because of the Democrats. You've got similar commentary taking place on NBC News. Blasting Hakeem Jeffries, calling him out on his nonsense. You've got Democrats trying to rehash and re-argue this issue, yet their old clips are being pulled up. I mean, I will give NBC News and Kristen Welker a lot of credit. I don't do that very often because normally their show is no good, but I am an equal opportunity offender, and when somebody does something that needs to be done, I have no problem calling it out. No issue calling it out at all. And so when you watch Meet the Press yesterday, you see NBC News calling up clip after clip after clip of Democrats saying, clean CR, clean CR, clean CR. And that's exactly what Republicans brought forth, and it is now something that is not good enough for those on the political left. Here's Cory Booker, the man who spent, what was it, 24, 36 hours earlier this year over the summer debating and arguing issues on the floor of the United States House or the United States Senate. Here's Cory Booker completely losing his mind on ABC's This Week program yesterday morning.
Aren't you a little worried that they're going to blame you for that because they need Democrats? Yes, those could affect your constituents.
I don't care about the blame game. I care about Americans losing their health insurance, rates of death going up, hospitals being crushed, medical services ending in places in rural America. This is a tsunami of Donald Trump's creation. The pain, the hurt, the fear that's going to rise amongst millions of Americans who are going to lose health insurance. Dear God, just come to the table and do something to help Americans. This is truly, for many Americans, existential. We're getting calls from Republicans in my state
who are
part of hospital boards saying what is coming is crazy, and it's not coming in January. People will start literally getting their notes about their healthcare premiums going up in a matter of days. We need to deal with the crisis of the American people, a crisis of Donald Trump's
mind. It's just not working. I mean, dear God. Dear God, dear God, dear God. Please come to the negotiating table. There's nothing to negotiate, guys. I think you're missing the whole point on this. There's nothing to negotiate. It's a continuing resolution. Pass the CR if you want to reopen the government. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't frankly care if they reopen the government. I think the federal government actually shutting down would be a great thing for our country. I really do. So pass the continuing resolution and debate this out between now and November the 21st. If you care so much about the American people, Cory Booker's getting calls from Republicans in his district. That's not true. That's absolutely not true. But that's what Cory Booker has to say about it on ABC News. So they've lost the messaging. They've lost the agenda. They've lost the narrative. And there is really nowhere else for them to go. It is being pinned at the feet of the Democrat, at the feet of the Democrats. It should be pointed at the feet of the Democrats. And they don't have any sort of retort. And it is amazing to see media outlets like NBC and ABC and CBS calling out the Democrats on their previous pleas for continuing resolutions. Now they've got one right in front of them and they refuse to support it. So the shutdown continues as we roll into the first week of October. We'll keep you up to date with all of the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. All right, to some North Carolina statewide news this morning, a big political news on Friday as Democrat Governor Josh Stein, after 9 days of inaction on Arena's Law, was essentially forced into signing it into law. He released about a 3.5-minute video on his social media accounts on Friday, had very little to say positive about the bill, yet he signed it into law. There's good reason for it. I'll get into my analysis and coverage of it. But first, the governor of North Carolina, Josh Stein.
It's Josh Stein, your governor. My top priority is to keep people safe. Here in North Carolina, we've recently had two tragic reminders of just how important it is that we do everything in our power to protect people. Our hearts ache for the families of Arena Zarutska and the three people who were killed in Southport. And we all pray for those injured to heal. These random murders raise real concerns for people all over the state. Everyone deserves to be and to feel safe in their daily lives, on their way to or from work, at school, at their place of worship, in a restaurant, and in their own home. We can and must do more to keep people safe. When I review public safety legislation that comes to my desk, I use one simple test. Does it make people safer? House Bill 307, or Arena's Law, alerts the judiciary to take a special look at people who may pose unusual risks of violence before determining their bail. That's a good thing and why I have signed it into law. The law fails, however, to focus appropriately on the threat that people pose instead of their ability to post bail. And most alarming, the General Assembly sprung a last-minute amendment that aims to bring about execution by firing squad to North Carolina. It's barbaric.
I'm going to pause the governor here in his commentary on House Bill 307. I do find it interesting that Democrats have essentially ignored the whole rest of House Bill 307, which is Arena's Law. Now, it's not a lengthy piece of legislation, as we talked about. When you look at the length of the bill, it's only like 20 pages. So it's not a 700 page bill with all of these intricacies. It's a relatively straightforward piece of legislation. And in all 20, 21 pages, Democrats have ignored the vast majority of it and continue to focus on the death penalty, as that is the major win in all of this from a political standpoint. Let's be clear, and let me give you a little history lesson here in North Carolina. The death penalty is on the books in North Carolina. It has been on the books in North Carolina for decades. The many states have outlawed it. North Carolina is not one of them. If you commit a heinous enough act in North Carolina, you are subject to have prosecutors seek the death penalty against you. Even here in southeastern North Carolina, there's been some discussion over the last couple of days from District Attorney John David in Brunswick County about seeking the death penalty against Nigel Edge, the individual who shot and killed three people in Southport last weekend. The death penalty already exists in North Carolina. This is nothing new. And for Josh Stein to act like he's never heard this before and that the death penalty seemingly didn't exist before this legislation is absurd. He was in the Attorney General's office for over a decade. He knows that the death penalty existed and exists in North Carolina. He knows that it's been on the books. He knows that it's something that prosecutors can seek. This legislation instructs the government of North Carolina to investigate other execution methods besides lethal injection if something like lethal injection is ruled unconstitutional or illegal by either a state or federal court. That is what this legislation does. It says, fine, if the one form that we use, which is lethal injection, is deemed not viable anymore, we need an alternative path to individuals who go through a process, right? Let's be clear. You don't just wake up one day and have the death penalty levied over your head. You have to commit an incredibly heinous act of violence. You then have to go through a lengthy legal battle in which you, as an individual, are innocent until proven guilty. You have to go through that entire legal challenge with prosecutors seeking the death penalty, and then you have to have a judge in the sentencing agree with that. It is not a easy, simple process, and it's why, even in many other states, you don't see the death penalty gone after. Look at the Brian Koberger case in Idaho. Prosecutors, because there is such a high bar for the death penalty, they decided not to pursue it. So now he's going to rot in prison for the rest of his life. So the entire messaging from those on the left that this is all about the death penalty seems so incredibly stupid. We heard Democrats arguing in the General Assembly last week over this. Oh, my God, the firing squad. It's so inhumane, so on and so. It's completely missing the issue at hand. House Bill 307, Arena's Law, was brought forward by the North Carolina General Assembly because Democrats in places like Charlotte are incapable of protecting their own communities. They are incapable of holding criminals accountable for the things that they do. And as a result of that, lawmakers in Raleigh are now forced to essentially hold their hands and make sure that they make good decisions. That's why House Bill 307 was introduced by the General Assembly, passed by the General Assembly, and then sent to Governor Josh Stein's desk. So in the final 2 minutes of this video, you will hear nothing more from the governor than complaints about what's going on in the General Assembly. Take a listen.
There will be no firing squads in North Carolina during my time as governor.
Yeah, well, wait, see.
Beyond those specific concerns with the legislation, I'm troubled by its lack of ambition or vision. It simply does not do enough to keep you safe.
Okay, hold on a second. Sorry. I was going to let this play through, but I can't. Really? Josh Stein, the sitting Democrat governor of North Carolina, who spent 8 years as the attorney general, whose party advocates for cashless bail, who advocates for allowing dangerous, hardened criminals to roam the streets of cities and towns across North Carolina. He's got the balls to claim that this legislation doesn't go far enough to keep people safe. It's no wonder it took the governor 9 days to act on this legislation. The amount of mental gymnastics that you have to go through to somehow claim that now the Democrat Party is the one that are the ones that are trying to keep you safe. The amount of mental gymnastics that you have to go through to claim that actually you're the good guys in all of this. It's not your disastrous bail policies that have allowed this to take place. It's not your disastrous soft on crime policies that allowed somebody like Arena Zaruska to get murdered. It's no wonder it took the governor 9 days to sign this. What a ridiculous and absurd thing to claim. That it's not him. It's not his party that have allowed these policies to destroy communities across the country. It's the Republicans. They're not going far enough. I mean, really, Governor Stein. I think you can do a little bit better than that.
North Carolina during my time as governor. Beyond those specific concerns with the legislation, I'm troubled by its lack of ambition or vision. It simply does not do enough to keep you safe. That's why I'm calling on the legislature to come back and pass my comprehensive public safety package. A package that includes more cops on the beat, well-trained and public-spirited, building trust in the community and keeping people safe. Violence prevention measures like keeping kids out of gangs and getting people off drugs. And if we're serious about making people safer, we have to acknowledge the role that guns and mental health play in violence that we're seeing all across the country. We can respect people's Second Amendment rights while also ensuring that anyone who is violent or dangerously mentally ill does not have access to guns.
Now, we already do that. And this is the unfortunate reality for those on the political left. We already have laws across the country and across the state that already do this. If you are a felon, if you commit a crime, if you are charged with a felony, if you go through the constitutionally allowed and constitutionally protected legal process, innocent until proven guilty, you go through all of that and you are found guilty by a jury of your peers, and you are convicted of a felony, you immediately lose your rights to bear arms in the state of North Carolina and throughout the vast majority of the United States. We already have those laws on the books. Yet somehow, and this was one of my favorite things to do when I was hosting mornings here in Wilmington, all the local crime stories. Anytime that you would get a news release from WPD about an individual who had shot somebody, had done this, had done that, you'd always see the exact same thing in the release from Wilmington Police. And by the way, here's an example. This is a story on WECT. A man is facing multiple felony charges after leading the Wilmington Police Department on a foot chase near South 10th Street. On October the 2nd, which was Thursday, an individual by the name of Jirazi Vaughn was seen concealing his identity with a ski mask by WPD officers. According to WPD, when the officers tried to approach Vaughn, he ran away. WPD states that Vaughn was arrested shortly after the officers set up a perimeter search, during which they found Vaughn in possession of crack cocaine that he was allegedly trying to conceal and ingest during the arrest. During the same search, officers also recovered a firearm, according to WPD. Okay, I mean, guy had a gun. Vaughn has been charged with the following: possession of a firearm by a felon. The same thing over and over and over again. Felons, individuals that have already indicated that they are not interested in following the law, will continue to break it. We already have gun control in America. If you are a convicted felon, you cannot legally possess a firearm. Yet every single time you read a crime story in Wilmington and any other place across the state of North Carolina, it is the same thing. Possession of a firearm by a felon. The laws are already in place, Josh. You're already not allowed to possess a firearm if you're a felon. Yet somehow, and this is shocking to me, I'm sure it's shocking to you, somehow criminals don't really care about following the law. I know, it's shocking. Criminals aren't interested in following the letter of the law. I know, it's shocking. So while the governor claims that, oh, we need more protection, we need to do more to keep guns out of the hands of violent offenders, it's already being done, Josh. It's already illegal. Yet we see time and time and time again individuals being charged with possession of a firearm by a felon. There's your gun control. It doesn't freaking work, because individuals who want to break the law will do so. They don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about the consequences that will be bestowed upon them. They don't. It's obvious. There's a reason that they're named and called criminals. They are inherently not going to follow the law. But for Governor Josh Stein, he's got to make sure that they don't have access to guns. Violent criminals. And of course, let's completely ignore the fact that Irina Zaruska was not shot on the Charlotte light rail back on August the 22nd. She was stabbed in the neck 3 times by DeCarlos Brown Jr., a literal schizophrenic, a 14-time convicted felon who was roaming the streets of downtown Charlotte. But yes, let's agree with Governor Josh Stein. It's those damn Republicans that are just not doing enough.
Let's use comprehensive background checks to keep guns out of the hands of violent criminals and dangerous people. And let's give family members and law enforcement the power to seek to temporarily remove a gun from someone who is a danger to others or themselves.
Red flag laws.
Finally, we must have a well-functioning mental health care system that gets people the treatment that they need. In recent years, on a bipartisan basis, we've made some real progress, but we all know that it's not enough. As a start, the General Assembly must fully fund Medicaid when they come back to Raleigh this month. And then let's fix our mental health care system for the long haul to help people and to keep us all safe. It's time to get real about the causes of violence and to take meaningful action to address them. Let's roll up our sleeves, actually tackle tough issues head on, and put in place effective solutions to make North Carolina families safer. Let's get to work.
Ain't that the pot calling the kettle black there? Yeah, let's roll up our sleeves and tackle the tough issues. Let's actually keep North Carolinians and their families safe. I mean, it's not like Republicans haven't been screaming from the rooftops about that for the last 5 years, since the defund police movement began in 2020. There's not been a political party that has been talking about how stupid it is to defund law enforcement. There's not been a political party screaming and yelling about how removing cashless bail or instating cashless bail is a good policy. No, nobody's been talking about that at all, Josh. You're absolutely correct. What a weak response from the governor. It's no surprise. I'll get into some details on this legislation and why he really had no choice but to sign it coming up. And I'd love to get your comments as well. You can throw those in on our Rumble X live stream and Facebook chats this morning. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Monday morning, the first full week, of October, I do want to thank the great folks over at the Law Group for their continued support and let you know that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in Melissa Gott and the great team over at the Law Group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. One of the big things you might be looking at, maybe purchasing a home. Maybe a first-time home buyer, maybe you're looking at purchasing a rental property. If that's the case, the Law Group is ready to serve you. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington. And just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088. Or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I had the pleasure of working with Melissa and the great folks over at the Law Group a little over 5 years ago when I went through the process of purchasing my home. Nobody better in the area than the Law Group. Reach out to them today, lawgroupnc.com or 910-251-6088. We'll continue the discussion on Josh Stein's signature of Arenas Law on Friday as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Monday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Hopefully you enjoyed a pretty nice weekend across the at least southeastern portions of North Carolina weather-wise. As we continue our coverage this morning of a Democrat Governor Josh Stein's signature of Arenas Law on Friday, that was the deadline for him to either sign or veto the legislation. If he had not done so by 11:59 p.m. Friday night, the House Bill 307 would have become law automatically. Our Constitution gives the governor 10 days after a piece of legislation is given to him, brought forward to him, to either sign or veto it. If he fails to act within a 10-day window, it becomes law automatically. So he signed it, and I'm not really surprised that he did. Let's look at the issue at hand, which is Democrats soft on crime policies. That's what is at discussion this morning. Really, there's nothing else. That is the long and the short of this. Democrat cities like Charlotte, Democrat counties like Mecklenburg County, have allowed their cities and their counties to fall into essentially disrepair due to soft on crime policies. They have allowed their cities to become so incredibly dangerous, not because there's too many criminals, but because they refuse to hold them accountable. We heard about this last week. The Senate, or the United States House, had a Judiciary Oversight Committee hearing in Charlotte last week. We played the clips on the podcast. If you missed that, I'd encourage you. I think it was last Tuesday's podcast. Go and check that out in your favorite podcast app or on YouTube or Rumble. And we heard the same thing over and over again. We heard the same calls over and over again from individuals about how criminals are not held accountable for their actions, how criminals are allowed to roam the streets of our cities without ever being held to account. I don't want to bring this up because I know it's an emotional clip, but just listen to the plea from Steve Federico, whose 21-year-old daughter was brutally murdered by a violent repeat offender. This is the issue that is at hand. This is from the House Judiciary Committee meeting in Charlotte 1 week ago.
Laying down, going to sleep, feeling somebody come in the room and wake them and drag her out of bed, naked, forced on her knees with her hands over her head, begging for her life. Begging for her hero, her father, me, that couldn't be there. She was 5'3". She weighed 115 pounds. Bang! Dead. Gone. Why? Because Alexander Devontae Dickey, who was arrested 39 times, 25 felonies, was on the street.
I mean, there it is. 25 felonies and an individual is roaming the streets with a gun, surprise, surprise. There's your gun control, Governor Stein. There's your gun control, Democrats. A 25-time convicted felon had a firearm. So tell me again how your gun control argument is going to help here. Tell me again how the violent criminals, like the one that murdered Steve Federico's daughter, tell me again how taking away my guns as a law-abiding citizen, tell me how that is going to protect Steve Federico's daughter. The individual that murdered her could not legally possess a firearm in the United States of America. Could not. There is no legal channel that he could go through to purchase a firearm. Yet, he had one and shot and killed his daughter. So explain to me how we're going to solve this problem with gun control. Explain to me how we're going to solve this problem with violent repeat offenders, violent repeat criminals with mental health care. It's a joke. It's not serious. The answer to this, the solution to this problem, folks, is as simple as it can be. Hold criminals accountable. That's it. That's the long and the short of it. If you stop placating to criminals, if you stop allowing them to assimilate or attempt to assimilate in a just and law-abiding society, the problem goes away. But Democrats aren't interested in doing that. Josh Stein isn't interested in doing that. The Charlotte City Council isn't interested in doing that. They want to give them a second chance. A third chance, a 15th chance, a 30th chance to clean up their act and get their lives back on track. We just need to spend more money on mental health care. That will absolutely solve the problem. We'll allow the 14-time convicted schizophrenic to roam the streets of Charlotte, and we'll just hope and pray and assume that he doesn't stab a 23-year-old girl on the neck on the Charlotte light rail. That's the Democrats' plan. That's their solution. Oh, we'll just hope. Oh, we'll pray on them. We'll pray and say, oh, we hope these individuals get better. We'll hope that they don't shoot and kill a 21-year-old girl who was sleeping in the middle of the night. We'll hope that a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee who is actually trying to become a productive member of society, moving from a war-torn country to the Queen City. We'll just assume that she's not going to get stabbed in the neck, have her throat slit on a Charlotte light rail, bleeding out on the car. We'll just hope and assume that that doesn't happen. You guys have had 5 years plus to try this garbage out. It obviously isn't working. It is obviously not sustainable long term. We are past the point of trying to pander to criminals. We are past the point of giving deference to criminals. It's over with. The American people, folks in the city of Charlotte and around the country, are putting their foot down and saying, enough! How many innocent people need to be murdered at the hands of violent repeat offenders before Democrats are slapped in the face on this issue and realize it doesn't freaking work? That's where we are. This stuff doesn't work, guys. And the pleads for more money for mental health care, that's not a solution. The unfortunate reality is this. If somebody has proven that they are incapable of being a productive and useful member of society, if they've been arrested 39 times, if they have been convicted of 25 felonies, I think at that point we should get the hint that this is an individual who is not going to be anything productive, is not going to provide anything useful to society. I don't think I'm stepping too far out on a limb this morning by making that comment. What more do you need to see? I think the guy that killed Steve Federico's daughter was 30 years old. He'd already had 25 felonies. How is that even possible? Well, when you allow these people to go through a revolving door of equity in the criminal justice system, that's how. When you refuse to hold criminals accountable for the things that they do, that's the situation that unfortunately plays out. You don't need to have a background in criminal justice. You don't have to have been in law enforcement. You don't have to have been in any closely aligned industry to clearly understand that repeat offenders, individuals, and I'm not saying that some people don't make mistakes. They do. And if you make a mistake, you do something you're not supposed to, should you be held to account for it? Yes. But you should also get a second chance. I'm a strong believer in that. But we're not talking about people getting a second chance. We are talking about individuals that have a proven track record of them being incapable of assimilating into a modern society. That's it. These individuals, this isn't about a second chance. 25 felonies? Oh, so maybe on the 25th, he won't go out and kill a 21-year-old girl. Oh, no, that's what he did. But I guess for the Democrats, they can pat themselves on the back and say, look, we were equitable. Look at this. We had racial and equitable justice in this case. Yippee. Now there's a 21-year-old girl who was pulled out of bed in the middle of the night and shot and killed and executed in a bedroom. Irina Zaruska, riding the Charlotte light rail to go home from work, her throat slit, bleeding out on a train. Is that the equity that you're looking for? That's what you're trying to bring to society? It's freaking insane, folks. And the left always goes back to the same thing. Here's the solution to the problem. More money. If the Republicans would just come back to Raleigh and fund more money for Medicaid, that's going to stop DeCarlos Brown Jr., the schizophrenic 14-time convicted criminal. That's going to, more money to Medicaid would have stopped him from stabbing her in the throat. Really? Draw me the connection. Connect the dots that gets you from more money in Medicaid to DeCarlos Brown Jr. not killing Irina Zaruska on August the 22nd. I'd love to see the timeline of how that process works out. I won't ever see that. You won't ever see that because that's not how it works. No amount of additional money through the Medicaid program would have stopped DeCarlos Brown Jr. from killing Irina Zaruska. You are talking about an apples and oranges comparison when you try and equate the two things. The answer to this problem is as simple as it could be. We get back to a time in our country where we hold criminals accountable for the things that they do. We stop pandering to them. We stop making them the victims in all of this. Oh, well, it's these individuals, they're just victims of the criminal justice system. They're victims of being raised in a broken home. They're victims of poverty. The list goes on and on and on and on and on, how they are really the true victims. Meanwhile, innocent Americans, innocent North Carolinians have to lose their lives because of the victims of crime, the victims of a bad upbringing, the victims of poverty. So you and your family have to risk your life and security because of somebody's past. Explain to me how that makes any sense at all. The governor had no choice but to sign this legislation. His back was absolutely pinned up against the wall. If he didn't sign it, he has to own all of these Democrat weak on crime policies. He had no choice but to sign it. And he's getting flack, as you would expect, from the radical progressive left, because these individuals, even after everything that we have watched unfold, still believe that these disastrous policies like defunding the police, allowing violent repeat offenders to just consistently get back out on the street, that these policies are somehow just going to magically start working. They're going to flip a switch, and then magically all of these great cashless bail programs and all of these other wonderful policies are magically just going to start working. Folks, we've watched this stuff play out. I don't need to see anymore. The experiment is done. It obviously doesn't work. It obviously doesn't work. Now, could you maybe point to specific examples where maybe things were better? Sure. But at what risk? It doesn't work. We've seen it. We've watched it play out. It doesn't work. It is time to say, okay, tried this experiment. It didn't work. It's time to move on. That's what being a leader is. That's what problem solving is. Try and find a solution to a problem. Okay. The solution that we came up with doesn't work, so it's time to pivot to something else. Democrats are unwilling to do that. They are unwilling to look in the mirror and see the result of these disastrous policies. So it is once again taking the adults in the room, the Republicans in the North Carolina General Assembly, to step forward to say, we're ending cashless bail. We are going to force judges and magistrates all across the state of North Carolina to provide written facts, finding of fact as to why a criminal should be released, this which is going to be incredibly hard for them to do in cases where you've got multiple time violent repeat offenders. And if a magistrate refuses or fails to do that, then we are going to oust them from their position, which is what Arena's Law does. It allows the Chief Justice in a court setting to remove a magistrate or a judge that does not provide the finding of fact that justifies a violent repeat offender from being out on the streets. Plain and simple. This is a great piece of legislation. It is unfortunate that the General Assembly had to act on this. It is unfortunate that lawmakers in Raleigh had to spend time telling Democrats and holding their hands across major blue cities in our state that you are no longer allowed to release violent repeat offenders on the streets with no strings attached, no cash bail, no nothing. It's unfortunate, but I'm glad that we live in a state where we have a strong Republican General Assembly. I'm glad we live in a state where lawmakers are willing, ready, and able to take action. The situation itself is incredibly unfortunate. Shouldn't have been there. Shouldn't have had to have the discussion in any way, shape, or form. Yet, unfortunately, here we are. So, Stein had no choice. He's going to be receiving flack from those on the political left. And from a purely political standpoint, this was a smart move for him. Getting rid of everything else, looking at this from a purely political angle, this was the absolute smartest thing that Governor Stein could have done. He can now claim that he's not soft on crime, that he is in favor of more being done. Smart from a purely political standpoint, even though I do not like Josh Stein in the slightest. A smart political move for Governor Stein. So the General Assembly is back. Looking at my calendar, I believe they're back the 20th, so 2 weeks from today. I don't think they're going to act on Josh Stein's public safety legislation, which I'm sure is riddled with a whole bunch of liberal wish list items. They're going to continue forward with doing everything that they can to protect North Carolina citizens. So props to the General Assembly, props to House Speaker Destin Hall and Senate Leader Phil Berger for getting this done, and props to Stein for signing it. He didn't have much of a choice, but he could have vetoed it, or he could have just allowed it to become law. So that's what we're tracking. Big news over the weekend, late in the day on Friday, which of course tells you everything you need to know. He signed this at like 3:30 on Friday, right before everybody's checking out, getting ready for the weekend. is when Stein decided to act on this. Great article this morning over at CarolinaJournal.com. Teresa Opanka's got it. If you want to read some additional details, which I'd encourage you to do, Stowe, the headline there, Stein signs Arena's law into law, but says it doesn't go far enough. I'll also have the links over at Patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to daily show notes and more, including our monthly hangout, monthly chat. Had that last week. We'll have one coming up here in a couple of weeks as well. All of that available over at Patreon.com/Nick Craig. For those watching live this morning or listening before 10 o'clock, I am filling in on this Monday, October the 6th, filling in from 10 a.m. to noon on WBT Radio in Charlotte for Vince Coakley. They'll be discussing Arena's Law, the government shutdown, a variety of other North Carolina political issues. That coming up 10 to noon this morning on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT in Charlotte. You can go to WBT.com to listen to that. 10 to noon, I'll also throw the podcast up on my social media. So looking forward to that. You can call and text in, be part of the show. 10 to noon, News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Don't forget, the Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Monday. We're back with you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.